Hello, I'm John Neff, Global Editor-in-Chief of Motor One, and welcome to this week's edition of the MotorOne.com podcast. Well, the day is almost here. It's about 1 week until the debut of the all-new mid-engine Chevy C8 Corvette. This is the most anticipated new car of the year, bar none. It's big news anytime a new Corvette is unveiled, but this time, Chevy's iconic sports car is finally switching to a mid-engine layout after decades of teasing. Today, we're going to discuss everything we know about the new C8 Corvette and its debut next week, and I've got the perfect co-host for it. Joining me is MotorOne.com writer and our in-house C8 expert, Christopher Smith. How are you, Chris?
Hi, I'm doing good.
And also with us is the man who'll be attending and covering the C8's debut for us next week, editor and video producer Clint Simone. How are
you doing,
Clint?
Counting down the days, John. Counting down the days.
Exactly. And to be clear, when this we're recording on a Thursday, we're exactly 1 week from the debut. It's happening next Thursday. What's the date? The 18th?
That's right. 18th.
I want to get started in our conversation about the C8 a little differently. I want to pull the curtain back. I want to show people a little bit behind the scenes of what this debut, what this lead up to this car has been like for automotive journalists. It hasn't been the same old, same old. And I'll give a description of what a typical car debut is. A typical car debut could be anything from an automaker, you know, sending us a press release and photos with no notice. Maybe, you know, we might not have any idea a car debut is coming and we just get an email and have to report on it. Normally, though, we do know a car is being debuted ahead of time, like we have for the C8 Corvette. And usually automakers, you know, release some teasers. Usually there are some spy shots, and if we're really interested, somebody might make a rendering of it. And normally a new car debuts at an auto show. And it's always anyone's guess which car debut at an auto show might be the biggest, but every automaker is hoping theirs is because they want to steal as much of the spotlight from the auto show as possible. Even rarer is when a car debuts outside an auto show and it's its own event. A car has to be really significant to get that sort of treatment. But it does happen. This one is different, though, because I can tell you, and Chris, you noticed this just this week when you were writing yet another post for Motor One on the C8, that we had officially reached 100 posts that we've written about the C8.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we're over 100, actually.
Definitely.
We have our tag that we use that we hit 100. But when you go back, and we actually, I don't know if you know this, John, our first C8 Corvette spy photo sighting was all the way back in 2016. It was like summer 2016.
Wow.
So you got stuff 2016, 2017. I mean, I don't even think we were using the tag at that point yet. In fact, I think 2016, John, even predates when you were at Motor One. So
It might. That was early on in the site's
It's life. Just been going and going.
So, we've been writing about this car for 3 years now. We've written well over 100 articles about it before it's even debuted. And that's a record for us. That, you know, I can tell you, having managed this site since almost the beginning, that I don't think there's been this much anticipation for a vehicle to date, while Motor One has been around, at least. I can actually remember, because I've been in the auto journalism game for a couple decades now. I was at the debut of the C6 Corvette, and it was at a venue. It was during the Detroit Auto Show, but it was they actually debuted it the night before the show at an offsite venue, like some theater or something. What I remember in particular about it was they gave everyone who attended like a scale model of the C6 Corvette, and it was like a fairly decent size. It was like, you know, a foot long, like real nice diecast model. And the person I was working for at the time, he left a little early and grabbed like four of them on the way out. And then we saw them on eBay like immediately, and they were going for hundreds of dollars. But, you know, like I said in the intro, anytime a new Corvette is unveiled is a big deal. I mean, there's only been seven generations to date. This will be the eighth. But this one in particular is the switch to the mid-engine layout. And this has been something people have talked about regarding the Corvette since, I mean, how far does that go back to, Chris?
It goes back to the 60s. We're literally talking about something that's been half a century in the making. And I mean, that's a bit of a hyperbole there. This design didn't actually start 50 years ago, but the idea started 50 years ago. And through the years, there've been hints and examinations and prototypes. There have been a few actual GM prototypes of a mid-engine Corvette, like the Corvette Indy, I think the Serve was in there.
Yes. I think, isn't it the Serve 3 that was the blue one?
I think so. I'd have to go back into my archives.
I did. I just looked it up. That is one of the most that I remember from growing up. That's the 1990 Serve 3 Corvette. Mm-hmm. It was a mid-engine Corvette concept. One of the most beautiful cars ever made. It was a concept, but honestly, it looked like it could have rolled into production.
Right. And I remember back then there was even some talk that, hey, the C5, this might be the C5. Well, we know it wasn't the C5, but
it wasn't the C6.
Right. But the, that little nugget has always been there over the last 50 years. So when you say there's some anticipation for this car, it's like, yeah. And
the buildup is decades long.
Right.
I think the only other car to rival this year was the Supra. And we saw the Supra in January. And that is a big deal because it's the return of an icon. This is not the return of an icon. This is taking an icon and turning it upside down on its head and completely reimagining what it is. So with that comes this unparalleled level of excitement. And I remember earlier in the year, we talked about just hitting Supra fatigue. I don't know if I'm at mid-engine Corvette fatigue.
I don't know that exists.
Limits. For as much as we know, there are so many questions left unanswered that it's just going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting to see how they take a completely new angle at something, like Chris said, that is decades long, unchanged and sort of just improved upon it. And now you're really starting from square one again, so to speak.
And I'm glad you brought up Supra because John, you've been saying that this is very different from the journalist side. You're absolutely right. We had Supra fatigue because Toyota gave it to us. They dropped so many teasers, so many events, many things that Toyota did. GM, though, they've really done nothing.
This has all
been on the enthusiast side, all the renderings that we've been getting to talk. I saw a comment on one of our Corvette articles. I'm guessing from a Supra fan that was saying, the Supra debut was much bigger. Here's where it's different. Toyota was driving the hype on that for the Corvette. The enthusiasts, people are driving the hype. GM has been almost hands off. We have two teasers and one official announcement that, we're going to reveal this Corvette.
They did show the prototype, the camouflage prototype.
Yeah, they drove it through Times Square. So that was their sort of big stunt.
Right, but that was only after we had seen that same camouflage prototype 100 times.
A million times,
In spy photos.
And that was to announce the actual unveiling date for the car. So it was very purposeful the way they did that.
So yeah, most of our coverage, most of those 100+ articles have been lots of spy photos. We've published spy photos of the prototype in every state of undress. And at this point, they're running it around with just camouflage and no cladding or anything to hide lines, just camouflage to make it harder for you to tell what the exact lines are. But what I've found so interesting about the C8 Corvette is that we've had so many renderings, so many people on their own, some amateurs, some professional designers, take the spy photos and turn them into renderings. Not only have we had dozens and dozens of renderings of every version of the C8 Corvette you can imagine, from the regular to the convertible, to the Z06 version, to the racing version, but we've even had people make 3D animated renderings.
I know. It blows my mind that they're putting this kind of time into it. And I mean, it's not rinky dink either. Like the 3D video that we had of the Corvette convertible sitting in a guy's driveway. It's like, okay,
it was great. It was a great video.
The top is going down while the camera is walking around the car. And look, that's somebody's house in the background. It's like, I'm sorry, Super guys. The Super is awesome. But there wasn't any kind of excitement like this for the Supra.
Well, I think the only car that could rival the anticipation of a new Corvette is a new Mustang. However, that would be in a normal circumstance. The fact that it's switching to a mid-engine layout makes this Corvette unveiling unlike any other. I think that's why the anticipation is so high. I mean, obviously, we're never going to see a Mustang switch to a mid-engine layout, although we
Don't
might see an
that.
Electric. We
Don't
might see an electric that. Mustang pretty soon.
Never say never. We might see a Mustang
Mustang SUV. Exactly. So yeah, if that happens, maybe we'll see this type of enthusiasm and anticipation again. But yeah, to date, this is one of the most anticipated new car debuts I have ever witnessed the lead up to and participated in. And it's been fun. I mean, it's fun to just keep talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fun that the readers and everyone out there is still so interested in it. So let's move on and actually talk about what we know. Because there's, you know, it's a week away, but there's still a lot we don't know. So Chris, you've written and updated the article for us, the Everything We Know article on Motor One about the C8. Let's start there. What can you tell us that we know for sure, and what we know that's kind of reasoned and educated speculation?
Right. And just for our listeners out there, this Everything We Know article has literally just been updated this morning. It should be in the main cycle at the MotorOne.com homepage, so you can reference that. Kind of going down that article, we will start with the engine. Obviously, the engine is behind the driver now instead of in the front. We heard conflicting reports for quite a while that, okay, it's either going to be a 6.2 liter push rod like the current Corvette has, or it's going to switch to the double overhead cam. Right now, it looks like, and again, this isn't officially confirmed, but all indications point to this being the 6.2 liter V8 push rod engine tweaked to fit behind the driver instead of in the front. It should have a little bit more horsepower. Right now, that LT1 makes 460 horsepower in the base Corvette. Reports are saying that this should have around 500, whether it's 500 exactly, whether it's a little under, we probably won't know until next week. And the changes will also probably make this engine the LT2 as opposed to the LT1. So that should be the engine that launches in the base Corvette. Now, going forward, I mean, we've heard reports for the last couple of years that there's going to be the new double overhead cam engine in there, possibly related to Blackwing. Although we just had a report the other day that said, I think it was from Mark Russ at GM, that they haven't actually put the Blackwing engine in the C8 prototype yet. But
just for those who don't know, the Blackwing engine is a Cadillac engine that Cadillac have maintained will only ever be put in Cadillac engines. However, it is a serious motor that, just from what we've heard, would sound, you know, would be really cool in the Corvette. But for now, as far as we know, Cadillac is keeping a tight grip on that, and it won't end up in the Corvette,
even though it's actually built in Bowling Green. You know, it's just like there's so many consistencies there. It's a 4.2 liter V8. Rumors said that the Corvette could have a 4.2 liter double overhead cam V8. That recent report that I was referencing about GM, he said the Blackwing engine hasn't been in the Corvette yet, but I don't think he mentioned a double overhead cam engine being
right
in the Corvette
yet.
And there's a particular spy video that we saw. It was about a year ago. Of the C8R, the racing model. And I'm sorry, that car does not have a pushrod in it. When you hear it go by, it sounds unlike any other racing Corvette you've ever heard. So when they say, we haven't put the Blackwing engine in there yet, I would bet $1,000,005. That's how confident I am. $1,005,000.
That some version of it has been in there.
They have prototypes out there with at least a double overhead cam engine. That could be a 4.2 liter. We've heard there's also a 5.5 liter, twin turbos, flat plane crank V8. And yes, we've also heard, and it seems fairly likely, that at some point there'll be a all-wheel drive hybrid version that could have 1,000 horsepower or more. It's going to be the Corvette to end all Corvettes. And honestly, I can't wait to see that show up.
Yeah, that'll be amazing. I mean, I think 5-10 years ago, you know, if you had mentioned a hybridized Corvette, people would have gotten visibly angry. But nowadays, where you have the hypercars being hybrids or plug-in hybrids and showing how effectively you can electric motors on the non-driven, the on the wheels that the engine are driving, it's not only is it a great way to put power on those wheels and control it very specifically. But it's also a cheaper way than making an actual like mechanical all-wheel drive connection between the two axles. So I think that's a really exciting prospect. We're probably not going to hear anything about that at the debut. The debut is probably going to be just the base Corvette, whether they call it Stingray again or not. We don't know. But
or Zora.
Zora could be another name. These are all, you know, down the road, the next Corvettes to debut.
I'm not even certain we'll get horsepower specs. Is that crazy to say?
It's not crazy to say. I mean, look at the GT500. Ford unveiled the Shelby GT500 back in January, and it was just in the last month we finally got a horsepower figure.
Right.
I suspect, though, if they don't give us a definitive horsepower figure, they will at least give us a range, you know, over 460 horsepower.
Right. Sure.
And I guess another thing we can talk about here, we've heard lots of rumors that production will actually begin at the end of this year. So, I mean, there's a fairly short time frame from when they're going to debut this to when the car is going to go into production. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised either way if they reveal the actual engine output at the reveal. One thing I'm curious about is the transmission, because a lot of the Corvette faithful have been lamenting that there probably won't be a manual offered in the C8, at least right off the bat. All the spy videos we've heard, I mean, you can clearly hear it's either an automatic or it's a dual clutch transmission. And honestly, guys, a dual clutch transmission, you still get control over which cog you want, but it's just doing it so much faster than you ever could. I'm fine with the dual clutch transmission in that car. Other things we've heard about, active aero. We've seen all kinds.
A lot of patents,
We've seen all kinds of patents showing various, active front splitters, active rear spoilers, active engine covers. It just goes on and on and on. The neat thing about that is most of these patents feature an image of a C7 Corvette. So,
yeah, that is funny. Yeah. Patents have spoiled the debut of many a car in the past. So I'm not surprised that GM is making sure that it doesn't happen this time.
They have. And I think that could also be because we've seen these patents for a while. I think that could also be some of the source of the rumors where GM was going to build the C7 and the C8 side by side for a while. That appears to not be the case. The C7, actually, C7 production is, if it's not ended already, it's about to end. I think it wraps up later in July, I believe.
Darn close to it.
I couldn't see them
left, I believe.
Yeah. I couldn't see them selling them both or producing them both together. Because honestly, just, you know, who wants to buy a C7 when a mid-engine C8 is right there?
Well, when you look into the Corvette community, it's a fascinating place to be, because there are a lot of people that are upset. They are not happy that the Corvette's getting its engine behind the driver. So
you think they could sell C7s to purists who just don't want to acknowledge or accept the fact that it's going mid-engine with no manual transmission?
I think there could have been an opportunity there to help show these diehard Corvette guys, the front-engine Corvette guys, hey, we'll give you the front-engine Corvette for a while the mid-engine is out, give you a chance to get used to it. But when you look through Corvette generations past, just about every new model launch, there's been a lot of that same pushback.
Oh, of course.
And right now it's like, we want our round taillights back. Well, you know what? The C7 is freaking amazing. You know,
probably want their pop-up headlights back too.
When the pop-up headlights went away, it's like, that's not a real Corvette. But you know what? As the car comes out and people see that, hey, this is actually really good, a lot of that criticism drops away. And you know, depending on how the C8 goes, I think you'll see that. But then again, this isn't just getting rid of pop-up headlights or round tail lights.
This is
all new baseball right here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we had some reports about that the C8 would have an untunable ECU. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that one was a little bit harder to follow, the kind of controversy over that.
Well, and really, I think it was the C7, at least with the ZR1, if not other C7 models, were supposedly going to have an untunable ECU. And I did a little bit of digging on that. And at the end of the day, somebody will ultimately crack something. What I was able to kind of dig up was that it seems like GM was getting a little tired of maybe some of their Corvette owners buying their C7s, getting an aftermarket tune, throwing it in there, going out to the track, having some fun, maybe having too much fun and burning up a cylinder, then coming back to the dealership where, admittedly, a lot of the Corvette buyers, they're older, they're a little bit higher in the income bracket. They might have good connections at dealerships. They might have high positions at dealerships. So they had some kind of connections there to wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, can you throw the original tune back in this car and let's get it covered under warranty.
Oh, wow.
The impression I had was that happened quite a bit. And really, dealerships are kind of the first line of defense for manufacturers when it comes to warranty claims like that. So to kind of circumvent that happening, the engineer said, okay, we're going to tweak this ECU so it's basically untunable. And from what I've gathered on the C8, supposedly if you try to upload a fresh tune, it basically wipes out all the programming in the ECU.
So it just bricks the car?
Yeah, it bricks the car. Wow. Then you have to go to GM, to the dealership. They'll reflash it with the stock tune, and that's it. And
I think you're right that somebody will eventually figure out how to get around that, how to tune it. But
oh, definitely. We can count on the aftermarket for anything. It is that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is the same community that, you know, jailbreaks iPhones. It happens eventually, right?
Right.
You know,
they figure it out. That's what happened with the ZR1. I think Hennessy finally broke the ZR1 after about a year or so. So when you say untunable, you know what? It's not going to be as easy as flashing up your Mustang for an extra 100 horsepower, but people will figure it out.
So we mentioned the name a little bit before. We don't know if the base model will be called the Stingray, or it could be called the Zora after the father of the Corvette. But what are some other names that have been floated around? I mean, are we gonna lose Grand Sport as the step up from the base model? Is the R1 gonna come back around?
Name is something that we haven't really heard a heck of a lot about. A lot of people in the Corvette community want Zora to be in there, and Zora is actually trademarked. Of course, Zora refers to the father of the Corvette back in the 60s, that he was really the one that championed a lot of the great Corvette models of that era and the mid-engine design. So a lot of people want that name to be affixed to the Corvette somehow. Our current info tells us that the base model should be called Stingray. That's going to stick with what the current
carryover.
Yeah, it's going to stick with what
that
the current model is.
That would surprise me a little bit.
Why is
just
that?
To differentiate between the two generations. I don't know. I mean, I have nothing to refute what you just said, but that would surprise me a little bit. Like,
I kind of agree. It seems like
going
a good time
between
to make
those two generations and how they're sort of each have their own very distinct character, that they would do something to differentiate the two a little bit more.
Well, I mean, you're certainly not wrong there. I would say taking some baby steps, so to speak. And I say that with air quotes because they're moving the engine behind the driver. There's nothing baby step about this. But if you can offer a little bit of commonality there, I don't know. I think Stingray would be a good place to start with the base Corvette. We've heard some reports that say that should happen. Of course, nothing is confirmed yet. We've also heard reports that Zora will appear at some point. Zora could become the top dog Corvette, the 1,000 horsepower hybrid that could come out here in the next few years. Other names, honestly, I haven't really heard much with regards to other names. I haven't heard anything about if ZR1 or Z06 will come back. I would expect to see a mix of familiar names and some new names like Zora.
Yeah.
I mean, ZR1 might be done. I would actually be very happy if the ZR1 moniker was done, because that was always the king of the hill, the big top dog front engine Corvette. Now is a great opportunity to retire ZR1 and make Zora the new high end. And you could have Z06 still be a good mid-level car. You could have Grand Sports. But yeah,
maybe the touring car. Maybe I should go out and buy that C4 ZR1 I've always wanted to buy.
Do it, John.
The price would go up. The evaluation would go up if they couldn't stop using the ZR1 name.
Don't tempt me. I want one of those too.
I know.
Yeah, you've been eyeballing those for a while, both of you.
I know. That are a first gen Viper. I've always just, that'd be the coolest thing to own. let's talk about price, because we should preface this by saying we don't know any hard info on the price. But if you look at the current C7 entry level price, the base price is about $55,900.
Right.
I find it hard to believe that they would be able to keep the starting price of the base Corvette the same as the C7. I would have to expect that's going to go up, and my guess would be like in the 65 to 70 range.
Right. And that's what reports and rumors are really telling us right now. I remember earlier this year, there was one of the forums, a person claimed to be an insider was saying that it was going to start at like 170 grand and all these things. And that kind of sent people into an uproar. And it started some rumors back then that, oh, the Corvette, the mid-engine Corvette is going to be just ridiculously high priced. But no, I agree with you, John, to keep buyers interested, especially with this first step into the mid-engine realm, and to keep it competitive, because when you talk a little bit about competitors, which we can do more later, that 65 to 70,000 range, it's a step up from the current Corvette, but it still keeps it within reach of some of us mere mortals, not all.
Now, I do think there's a possibility that it might jump to like 80 or 90. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, because this is such a big change for the Corvette. And if you look at some, like we can talk about competitors now. I mean, look at the Audi R8. Like that starts at $170,000. Now, mind you, it starts with a 562 horsepower engine. So right. It's
mid-engine exotics that come to mind, you know, an Huracan or an R8, those are putting down more power potentially than this entry-level Corvette will.
Right,
for certain.
Right.
And I don't think the Corvette is going to come out at 170,000. However, you know, if we're talking about a mid-engine car with around 500 horsepower, I could imagine 80, 90,000 for that. But they're just going to have to convince people that it's worth it, because everyone's used to the Corvette starting at around, you know, 55, 60. They're going to have to show us that it's worth it if they want to raise it that high. To me, this is one of the biggest unanswered questions that I think will affect the reception of the C8's debut, what is the base price going to be?
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if Chevrolet, if execs at Chevrolet are still kind of scratching their heads a little bit about, okay, exactly where is this going to fit? Who are we going to line this up against? Because, right, the Audi R8, Porsche 911 Carrera, those have kind of been traditional competitors, although the R8 is way up there in price. What's a new 911 Carrera? Isn't that around 80, 70, 80, somewhere around there?
I'm checking right
now. By
the time
you put any options on it, you'll hit the six figures. In fact, I think it starts...
No, it starts over six. It starts at 113,000.
Oh, really? Okay, it's even more than I thought. What about like the new came in the
Oh, no, GT4? I'm sorry. It starts at 91,000. I was looking at the Carrera S.
The Carrera S, yeah.
You know, John, I mean, the more we look into this, maybe there is some...
I just think, man, like I said, 500 horsepower mid-engine car for 65,000, that sounds like the screaming deal of the century. And I know that bang for your buck has always been a tenet of the Corvette, right? It's always been an incredible performance value. Mm-hmm. But part of that
has to maintain that they can't ditch that in the recipe all
but
together.
But I'm saying there's room to go up now. They could go to 80,000 and still be the best value in terms of mid-engine sports cars, you know?
Like, and then, of course, you have the very captain obvious statement of you won't be able to buy one of these in the first 6 months for less than six figures.
You're right.
Just straight off of a dealer lot.
I mean, I'm sure they'll want to produce as many of... They're going to have that Bowling Green factory, you know, at 150%, right, probably trying to meet demand.
Well, here's a question you have to ask yourself that I imagine Chevrolet execs are actually asking themselves. You have the current Corvette clientele, front-engine V8 driving the rear wheels. If this car goes to mid-engine, are those buyers now going to look more closely at, say, a Challenger Hellcat or a new Shelby GT500? To stick with that front engine, or should we keep the price a little bit on the low side, try to keep them in the Corvette world and convince them that, hey, moving the engine from the front to the back is going to be a better thing for you? You know,
I just think the Corvette brand loyalty, my guess is that it's stronger than the loyalty to a front engine layout. Like I think it's the loyalty is to the Corvette brand and car overall, not to the fact that it's front engine rear wheel drive.
See, this is where
some end, I think some of those people are going to go out and they're going to buy a C7 for an absolute song in the next couple of months too, because I can imagine the dealers will be negotiating.
Oh yeah, they're trying to get rid of them as best they can.
Talk about a performance bargain. A C7 Z06 is going to be wonderful.
Right, and this is where we need all of you Corvette listeners to go to MotorOne.com, get into some of our articles, and tell us: are you that loyal? Would you go if you're just?
I just get brand loyalty is just like, how could a Corvette person buy a Ford? How could a Corvette person buy a Dodge? Like, I just,
how could Chevrolet move the Corvette's engine behind the driver?
You're right. If it pisses you off that much, maybe you would bail and go get a GT500 or something. But
I don't think so. I don't. I think they'll stick with the brand. You're right about that, John.
It's going to be fascinating going forward, no matter how you look at it. That's what I'm excited about.
It will be,
their Corvette meetings and their cars and coffees, think of how much more time they have to talk about their car now that the engine has shifted location.
Well, you know, what's interesting, next week when the C8 debut is happening out in California, I'm based in Rapid City, South Dakota, the Black Hills. The oldest Corvette gathering in the nation is happening here next week that I'm going to go visit. And I'm going to be talking to some of these guys firsthand to see their opinions on a new mid-engine Corvette.
Let's get some reaction live from the ground.
Exactly. You know, thinking about competitors and pricing, the current ZR1 can already get above like 160,000 or so.
Yeah.
So when you start thinking of the C8 Corvette and then some of the versions that are going to come later, whatever they're called, you know, all the way up to the rumored, you know, 1,000+ horsepower hybrid version, I would expect that one to crest 200,000. At that point, the Corvette, if it hadn't been already with the current ZR1, it is swimming in the same pool as the Lamborghini Huracan, McLaren 570S, as some of these really legitimate supercars. At that, like to me, that's the biggest effect of the switch to mid-engine, is that it's creating a new upper ceiling for the Corvette that's a lot higher than the old one was.
Oh yeah.
Both in terms of price and performance and expectations, like everything just gets amped up to another level.
And you're right, that's the sort of correlation that we have to look at here, is the price jump will be warranted if this car can put the power down better, if this application can get around a track better. Obviously, I mean, the ZR1 currently has a million trillion billion horsepower, and to some extent it's uncontrollable the way it is, the way the power hits the wheels. It doesn't work as well as it could. So now you kind of start from the drawing board, put the engine in the middle. What is GM able to do with it? Are the performance figures going to rival that of a Lamborghini, Audi R8, even entry-level McLaren? If so, the price jump is warranted, I think.
I definitely think one of the reasons for this switch is overall performance, like on the track, because obviously a mid-engine layout is ultimately better for those situations. And Corvette and Chevy, they go racing. They go racing in a lot of different series with the Corvette, not the least of which is Le Mans. Mm-hmm. And winning there is so important to them. You know what comes to mind to me too? The Ford GT. So, you know, Ford comes out with basically this supercar out of nowhere. It's mid-engine. They immediately go after winning Le Mans, and they do. Now Chevy is coming out with a mid-engine version of the Corvette, and they're going to do the exact same thing. They're going to go hard at all the racing series, try to win all the big races, all the big endurance races. I don't think the Ford GT is ultimately going away fairly soon. I think we have the last version, the GT Mark II that was debuted at the Goodwood Festival of Speed last week. That's the last version.
Well, it's certainly not going away on a racetrack. You just said that, and you're right. I mean, and now Chevy's going to have a more competitive car to go up against them at Le Mans.
Well, I will say the only way the Ford GTs will stick around on the racetrack is through privateers.
Right.
You know, the factory effort will go away. So to me, it's kind of a bummer that the Ford GT and the mid-engine Corvette don't line up a little better, and they're only going to overlap just a little bit, both on the road in terms of, like, you know, sales and how they perform on the road, but also competing against each other on the track. They're going to miss each other a little bit. We'll probably, you know, obviously we'll get some comparisons of them, but it's fascinating that we're living in an age where two of the three American car companies have mid-engine supercars. of the caliber that these two were going to be. Obviously, we know the Ford GT's caliber is very well proven. We don't know the Corvettes, but I'm going to put my money down and say that Corvette Chevy engineers probably did a pretty good job based on what they've done with the last few generations of the Corvette. They've all been stellar. One thing that has dogged the Corvette pretty much every generation is the quality of its interior. And that's another thing that we haven't gotten really any peek into before the debut in terms of what is the interior design, what materials did they use, and what the build quality is. So Clint, when you're there next week in person, that's going to be, I think, something that we're most interested in hearing about right away is what's the interior like? Did they raise did they raise it a level that they needed to past Corvettes just have not reached, including the C7, right?
Yeah. To set Chris up a little bit here, I recall a few different spy shots where we saw a peek through the windows, and two things stuck out to me. One is we saw paddle shifters on the steering wheel to sort of corroborate what Chris was saying with automatic gearbox. And then two, sort of a long single row of buttons alongside the infotainment screen. So it looks like they did a pretty hefty redesign to separate this car from the C7. But, you know, material quality, things like that, we're completely left in the dark until we get around and play with it. I see this giant row of buttons, and my curiosity is certainly piqued with the way the cabin actually does look in person.
And to go along with that too, we heard a rumor, and this is a very kind of out there rumor. We haven't been able to really back it up at all, but it was mentioned on one of the forums. I can't remember which forum it was on, that there might be like a sort of a posh GT version of the Corvette that comes out eventually. That's going to be more upscale, almost maybe sort of like the new McLaren GT, where it's going to be a little softer on the suspension. It's going to be more plush inside. It's going to offer that upscale experience. That's just a complete far out rumor, but it's interesting that rumor even came up in the first place, because I mean, the Corvette interiors, they've gotten better over time, and I never thought they were terrible, but when you look at other performance cars of a similar vein, I mean, yeah, it was they're a little too much plastic.
On the Stingrays, I think they're fine. When you start to get into the Z06 and the ZR1 territory where you're paying six figures, then you're looking at the guy over in the Audi or the Porsche and being like, yeah, my plastic switchgear isn't as nice as their plastic switchgear. So yeah, we'll definitely be interested to hear your take firsthand when you're able to sit in one next week.
Let us sit in one.
yeah, exactly. We don't even know if they will. I'm scrolling right now through all of our spy photos of the C8 Corvette, and we've been writing about C8 Corvette spy photos for so long. We have multiple posts on spy photos of it being towed away when it's broken down. Like that's how many spy photos have been shot. Like spy photographers follow this thing so regularly and incessantly that they catch it even when the cars break down and have to be towed by a tow truck.
Well, and even better than that though, the professional spy photographers are out there, but I can't remember a car where we've received and we've seen
so many reader tips. Yeah.
And just fan videos of out, you know, around cars and coffee, and oh, there's a Corvette, or a Corvette going around a corner. There was a video where a guy was just like, Oh, check it out. I mean, he was just totally excited. It was like
yeah, right. And that makes it
flip of this camouflage car. And it's just, yeah, man, off the hook. This is off the hook.
Yeah. I'm super can't wait. So, all right, Clint, let's move on to talk about what next week will be like. Tell us what you can about the debut event that's happening.
Well, the bar is just a little high, isn't it?
A little bit.
Just a little bit of excitement surrounding this event. So as I have the invitation in front of me, I can say with confidence that we both know a lot and absolutely nothing at the same time. The invitation itself says the word Corvette. It has the logo that we're all accustomed to, and it says 7/18/19 with the number 8 highlighted in red, obviously to bring clarification to the fact this is the 8th generation Corvette. It doesn't say C8. It doesn't say Zora. Clean and simple, right? It leaves the rest to imagination. As Chris mentioned previously, it's in Southern California. The flights are booked and we're going there. But beyond that, all we really know is it's a quick agenda. There will be a live stream. That's probably the most important part of this, is around 8 o'clock p.m. I'm seeing per the invitation, California time, that is West Coast time, 8 o'clock, that the event will begin.
And so it's going to be late on the East Coast. It's
that's
be
right.
Like 10:30, 11 on the East Coast.
But and we encourage you to stay awake for a couple of reasons. One, you can watch that live stream from the comfort of your home. You do not need to be in California to get the same information we do as journalists as it's happening. The event will be live streamed. And then right after that, we will be going to battle, throwing elbows as much as we can to get inside of these cars, to put as much as we can. So please follow along at social media, and then check motor1.com as well. On Instagram, it's at motor1.com, and the same for Twitter. So we will be flooding all of our social media with the information as we get it, getting up inside of these cars.
And we will have the live stream on Motor One next Thursday, and right. We'll also publish instructions and details about it early in the day. So it'll be available and ready for you to kind of open in a tab and wait anytime next Thursday.
That's right. And then most importantly, we'll have our first video footage of the car in person as well. And that will be going up as soon as we can get it cut together. So you're talking late East Coast for sure. But prior to midnight on the West Coast time, we'll have our first video look as well. And that's available on motor1.com and then also on the YouTube channel, which is at motor1us on YouTube. One other detail I do have on the event that's kind of cool to me is it looks like prior to the actual unveiling of the car and the technical presentation, for 2 hours, it says the Corvette Corral and its owner's celebration to showcase cars. So this is a celebration. This is a look back at history for Chevrolet. And not only is it a very important unveiling, obviously, it's a full-on celebration where they look to be inviting owners and important people to the brand, Corvette clubs, etc. So there looks to be some sort of display going on prior to the unveiling
of the car. Well, and to me, that's one good strategy of getting the Corvette faithful on board right. with your switch to mid-engine, right? It's bringing them along. It's celebrating them at the debut. That's smart.
And we do know, I mean, just seeing from some of the different forums, I know some of the, I think the mid-engine Corvette forum.com guys, at least one of them, Chevrolet gave him an invite. So having that enthusiast connection involved is going to be key to make sure the Corvette people that aren't necessarily on board with the mid-engine design get on board. So, I mean, bravo. I got to give Chevrolet credit all around and GM for the way they've done this launch. We've seen so many things that are overhyped in the past that kind of let down. I feel like they've just done this right from square one.
It is overhyped, but I can't even blame GM for that.
Yeah,
I
mean, right. Exactly.
We are driving the hype machine here.
They've done the right thing by playing it cool.
So as much as we can show you, we will be able to show you, and we will. So at the event, like I said, at Motor1.com on Instagram and Twitter as well, we will be covering our social media with as much mid-engine Corvette content live from the ground as we can.
So we are going to keep writing about the C8 Corvette in the 6 or 7 days between now and the debut next week. So we're going to be talking about it more. We hope you join in the discussion on the comments on motor1.com. And you can also join us to talk about it on Facebook and Twitter. Like Clint said, our handle is at motor1.com. Not only be talking about this up until the debut, we're going to be talking about the C8 Corvette for another, I think, year and a half until they debut all the versions of it. Coming up, we're going to find out what the three of us have been driving this week. But before the break, I want to remind everyone that if you're listening to this online, you can also get our show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So please hit the subscribe button now so you never miss a show. Welcome back. During this part of the show, we talk about what cars we're driving this week. And today we're going to start with Clint. Clint, what are you driving this week?
We have an exciting one. We have the 2019 Ford Raptor.
Crowd pleaser, very right? Nice.
I can tell you a little bit about how it drives. This is a car that most people are familiar with, but all the stuff we know and love is there. 450 horsepower, 510 pound-feet of torque, 10-speed transmission, all these different modes, sport mode, Baja mode. You can shift it yourself with paddle shifters. It's wild.
So fun to drive. I got to drive it recently as well. And not only fun to drive, but just in a completely different way than a car, right? Or even a sport truck that's like a road, sports truck. It's just insane to drive. I absolutely love it. What I heard that part of Miami flooded this week from some heavy rains. Did you get to go get some rooster tails up in that?
We had some crazy flooding. The way we divvied up the cars that day, I was actually in our long-term Mazda CX-5, which handled everything just fine, I should add in. But driving that car and then getting into the Raptor is just hilarious. I mean, especially in Miami, where the street lanes are smaller and the streets are more compact in general, you are taller, wider, and longer than every car around you. And that, it's insane. Driving it through a city, it doesn't make much
honestly
sense.
Honestly, I think that's true everywhere with the Raptor. I live in a suburb, and when I drove it, you feel like you're driving something outsized for the road. Like you're
yeah,
6 inches away from the white stripes on either side of you.
That said, the things that stick out to me, the 10-speed transmission, really smooth, really well thought out. And beyond that, just the way it handles itself for being how big it is. But in addition to the normal how it drives, a couple quick things I wanted to share with you guys that I just found to be absolutely hilarious. MSRP for this thing, $73,200, which a lot of money, no questions.
I think that's
asked,
a steal. I think that's a bargain for what it is.
It's a lot of
truck. I totally do.
It's a cool truck, but it's a truck. Come on.
If you don't like that, you can go buy a first gen Raptor, which is still a great truck, for like under 20. Like the prices have dropped really low. There's some very affordable ones out there.
Right.
Less powerful, but still a great truck.
So we're starting at $55,840 for the base, and we have $15,720 worth of options, and that includes the $9,300 very coolly named Equipment Group 802A, which includes things like the Bang & Olufsen sound system, voice-activated navigation, 360 cameras, so a whole host of things. That makes a lot of sense to me, but my other two favorite priced out options here. We have the Raptor exterior graphics package, which just says Raptor in giant letters across the side of the truck. The least subtle option you can find, $1,100 for that, for some stickers. And then two, to counter that point, I thought a very reasonably priced option, second row heated seats, $125.
That is
that's quite reasonable.
Affordable.
Right. Thank you, right?
Yeah.
So I'm giving the Raptor some credit. The most obscure option I can find, $125 for rear heated seats. Those are the two that stuck out to me on our particular test vehicle.
I'd still get the
Raptor.
Graphics.
I love it.
In a segment of one, there's nothing that competes with the Raptor. There are other trucks that are jacked up.
Not yet.
Up,
we're looking at you, Ram.
Well, we'll see. Even when the Ram comes out with the Hellcat powered, I always forget the name of it, the Rebel
TRX.
Yeah. Even with, like, is that going to be as much of an off roader? And when I say off roader, I don't mean rock crawling. I mean dune jumping. Is it going to be as much of a performance, high performance off road vehicle as the Raptor is? Or is it just going to be kind of a novelty of we stuffed a giant engine in this jacked up truck? And we'll see. I don't know. But
the truck is so good to start. I have high hopes for it. They're taking their time with it too. I think they know exactly what they're doing, and it will be a worthy competitor when the time comes.
They are. All right. Chris, what are you driving this week?
Well, speaking of things that might be a little bit high on price, some of our readers or listeners might know I've been considering switching up my 2004 Mazda 6 for a brand new Kia Soul. And I went ahead and drove the GT Line Turbo. I drove the X Line. I like the X Line, looks better, but, and John, we've talked about this in the past, it's disappointing that Kia doesn't offer more options on the X Line. So I thought, well, let's take a look at the Turbo. More power is never a bad thing, right? And I got to be honest, I was really disappointed with the turbo. It's the 1.6 liter turbo. It's got the dual clutch transmission. The transmission, I'd love the transmission. It felt great in that car, but just the power difference really was negligible, I found, between that and the X-Line, which I think is the 2 liter turbo. I mean, it's a non-turbo. It's just a 2 liter engine. There's a little bit more oomph to it, but it's not enough to satisfy. And it's not enough to justify the Kia Soul that I drove was $29,000. That's a lot.
Yeah, they're expensive. I remember I did the first drive for that car back in February, and I remember driving that dual clutch and that model, the higher spec of the two GT Line models. And I was impressed with it, but you know, once you start putting in those components into a little hot hatch, you're asking it to compete with the GTI, even if it's indirectly.
Yep.
and it wasn't quite that level, but it's a very capable car. Your point about the X-Line is completely right, that they don't offer the biggest infotainment screen, the best sound system. You cannot spec an X-Line to the nines.
Honestly, I would just like better seats. I'm not really enthused about the seats in the X-Line. The GT Turbo, I love the seats in the GT Turbo. I felt it was a little bit more comfortable overall in that respect. But just the price is just too much for not getting enough excitement out of it. And if you want to talk about turbo lag, you need to keep that in the right gear. Otherwise, you roll on the gas, and that 1.6 just doesn't go anywhere.
You know, I haven't driven the new Soul with the turbo engine, but I did drive the last generation Soul with the turbo engine, and I believe the engines are practically the same.
Just about, yeah.
And I honestly remember thinking the same as you, Chris, where the difference in power, even though on paper it seemed somewhat large, I didn't really feel it as much as I thought I would on the road. And part of it is because even if it is a 200 plus horsepower engine, I mean, this isn't a GTI. This isn't a car that is meant to be a sports car or a hot hatch. You know, it's got a little bit of ground clearance. It's a little bit top heavy. Mm-hmm. So a larger engine, more power, faster performance doesn't feel like it gets used properly in the Kia Soul Turbo. I've always been fine with the 2-liter engine. That's the one we had in our 2014 Kia Soul, and have always felt it's more than adequate. Like it never stood out as not being powerful enough. It was plenty powerful enough, plenty civilized enough, and all of that. So
that's how I felt as well. It's just the X-Line does everything I need, and I just wish it had some more equipment. And I've kind of, because of all this, I've kind of talked myself out of a Soul now. I mean, it's still in my mind.
Well, and that's why I think they're getting a lot of feedback, both from critics and probably from consumers. I would expect that to change for the next model year. I don't know. Were you driving the 2019s?
I think it's the 2020.
Are they 2020s?
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
then maybe we'll have to wait a while longer. I think when 2021 comes around, they're going to change the equipment levels for the X-Line and offer more options. It doesn't make sense to not give people what they want, especially when they're willing to pay for it.
Right. So. And the twist to all this is now I'm kind of looking at a Honda Civic Si. I haven't driven one yet. But there are some interesting I found some interesting lease deals for a Civic Si. I don't know that if I'd go with the sedan or the coupe, but that could be a possibility.
I've never met a disappointed Civic owner, so you know.
True.
All right. So this past week, I had to give the keys back for the McLaren 720S Spider I was driving last week. Yeah, it's pretty sad. I had some fun with it. And this week, I accepted the keys to a 2019 Hyundai Kona. It is the ultimate front-wheel drive edition. I've had it a few days. I've driven it around. And it's interesting that you're driving the Soul, and we just talked about that. I mentioned that my wife and I have owned a Soul for a long time. This is like Hyundai's version of the Kia Soul. And I like it because it has a kind of quirky personality in the same way the Soul does. Like the Soul has a completely different look, but the Kona's look is also a little bit outside the mainstream, right? It has some character and personality to it. So I like that. That said, this is $28,680. So this is a high-end version.
Yeah, that's steep.
For what it is. And I don't know. I've been more impressed with the Soul when it's been optioned out and fully loaded than I am with this Kona. It just doesn't seem to quite match it. And, you know, I don't know. I don't expect that much from kind of the from a car like this, like an economy car, in terms of performance. But usually these kind of cars are pleasant enough to drive around town, you know, in 35 mile per hour zones. This one, it just doesn't even feel like it has the pep or the sprightliness to make even, you know, some low speed, just daily driving pleasant. It feels much more appliance-like. So right now, my first impression is that it's long on looks, but kind of short on substance. So I've got another half week to spend with it, though. So I'm going to take it out for a photo shoot this afternoon. So that'll let me inspect it a lot closer. But yeah, so far I'm kind of, I haven't warmed up to it as much. And it could be, I'm going to have to work against my Kia Soul bias, right? Because, you know, being an owner, you always have that urge to make yourself justify the purchase decision you made by always loving and defending the car you made, the car you purchased. So I'm going to have to work past that a little and give this one a fair shake. But I think I can do it. It just maybe needs to work a little harder to meet me halfway.
You know, and that's kind of how I felt on the Soul too. I started asking myself, am I going to regret not having better options in this car? And just the thought of that, the fact that I'm thinking about it, was a little discouraging. It's like, well, if I'm, sure, if I'm already asking about it now, you know,
you should be able to get the exact one you want. Yeah, you know, yeah. The fact that they're just not letting you because they don't offer those options on that trim level is, you know, annoying.
Yep. And I even thought about the Hyundai Kona too, but I'm just not on board with the modern trend of these big, huge trapezoid grills. There isn't one that I've been able to warm up to yet. And I'm looking at the Kona right now and I'm just thinking, yeah, that looks like a big whale sucking down some fish.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not for everybody. But, you know, when the Soul came out, it wasn't for everybody, too.
Right.
I think that a lot of people have warmed up to the Soul over time, seen it everywhere, seeing those mouse commercials or hamsters. Commercials. Sorry, hamsters.
The hamsters.
Yeah. So that always helps. A good marketing campaign behind it. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show this week. You can follow Chris at CH Writing on Twitter. And Clint, what's your Twitter handle?
At Clint Simone, and then Instagram at Clint_Simone.
Ah, that's very obvious, which is good for you. I couldn't get my own name.
It easier that way, huh?
Exactly. On Twitter, my handle is John_M_Neff, which is a pain in the ass to write when I'm typing it. But I want to thank you guys, you two, for being here. Thanks for joining me this week.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
And also thank you all out there for listening. We'll see you next week.